The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 717, recorded on March 14th, 2024.
Welcome to the 717th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 550th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So what have we been playing? Well, I've been playing Velotro. A lot.
It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah. It took me away. It's sharing time with Slay the Spire right now.
Yeah. It's. I reviewed that game for Shaq News, and man, what an addictive game. I love poker. I like roguelikes. I never would have thought that they could go so well together.
Yeah. I'm still trying to figure out the best combos for the Jokers. I beat Red. I've accessed every first level blue deck. Every color deck. I beat the Red deck. Now I'm trying to beat the blue deck so I can reach the next level of that one.
I beat the green deck the other day.
Okay.
Which that deck is a little bit easier than some of the other ones because you get money based on how many hands and how many discards you have left at the end. And so it's easy to get the money that you need to buy the cards that you need and get lots and lots of jokers. I have a set of jokers that are like my favorite ones. Yeah. There's a...
Oh, no. My favorite one is the one that gives you a bonus for the number of discards you haven't used. And then you get the artifact that increases your discard size. So now every time you're adding 160 chips to your hand. So you could do an ace high and still beat a hand if you have the right combination of jokers with that guy. All you have to do is not discard.
My two absolute favorites are the Hiker, which every card that you play that scores throughout the entire game, as long as you have this Joker, permanently gains +4 chips to its score.
Yeah, I have that one. I've seen that one.
And then that one and Castle, which this Joker gains this many gains +3 chips every time that you discard the right suite or the right suit in that that round.
I like the Joker that gives you +5 multiplier for every Joker that you have. So all you have to do is have 5 jokers, you have an automatically 15 times multiplier.
Yeah, I like those ones that if you can get them early, you can build them up into monsters by the end. Because then the only thing that's going to like stop you is if a boss blind has a thing that eliminates your jokers, which does exist.
Yeah, the irritating one is all card draws are hidden.
My least favorite one is the Eye, in which you can play one type of hand and only one type of hand for that entire round.
That's not so bad as the one that says you have to play different kinds of hands.
Yeah, I think they're both really annoying based on how you've specced up to that point. Like, because if you haven't put anything into like 2-pair and then you end up having to play 2-pair because that's the best you can get out of the discards, then you're kind of hecked. That's the end of your run.
Then you have the needle, which is basically, yeah, you can only have one hand, beat it with one hand and only.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't as bad because you just keep discarding until you get the right combo, but still. I've only had one row of flush, though.
A very, very, very good game, though.
So, yeah. Have you ever played Slay the Spire?
I have. Okay. And yes, this hits on some of the same notes. I think it's...
There was an interview, by the way, it was today, with a guy who made Velotro, right? And he said he had never played a roguelike in his life before.
He said he had never played a deck builder before.
Deck builder, whatever. He never played one of those.
Before developing Velotro. There was a roguelike slot machine indie game that inspired him to create Velotro.
Very strange. And the thing is that, you know, I think I've unlocked 90 of the 150 Jokers so far.
Yeah, I still got a ways to go. I'm currently working on trying to beat the game with the decks that I have.
I like the black deck too. Black deck is okay.
I came really close to winning with both the red and the blue deck, but I like got cut off like either anti-8 or anti-7 or anti-8. Both of them just like I ran into the worst set of circumstances right at the end.
So just so you know, people know, the black deck is you get an extra joker, but you also get one less hand per round. But I like having 6 jokers.
Yeah. If you can get your hand on some jokers that have special qualities to them, they also increase the amount of jokers you can have. But you have to like you have to usually destroy one of your cards in the process.
Anyways, Blatro's good. Scott has been playing Aiden Chronicles 100 Heroes, at least the beta version or the early access version.
The early access beta version, so we get to test out the game and see what it's like.
Without being too specific, how is it?
It's the game that I backed. This is
the one you expected? Like
this is what I wanted, what I expected. I'm very happy with the beta and can't wait for the full version of the game to come out.
I don't see how, I've stopped playing betas because I just want to, at least in games with a story, because it's just too irritating. Not irritating, but I just don't want to spoil the story for myself and then have to play it again when I start over.
I don't mind it so much because I played the Sea of Stars beta when that came out like 2-3 years ago.
That wasn't a beta, that was a demo.
It was a very early build of the game, and they changed it a lot after that. But it's like I played that, and then I played the demo later on, and neither one really affected my enjoyment of the final product. So I figured I'd try it out, the beta, and it's really good. I'm enjoying it, and I'm happy with it, basically, yeah.
It's going to be an Xbox Game Pass game, so I'll be able to do it that way.
Yeah.
TJ, what have you been playing?
I've been playing the holy heck out of Unicorn Overlord.
Oh, okay.
This is the latest game from Vanillaware, which has done 13 Sentinels, Aegis Rim. They did Odin Sphere. And I think they have a couple. Oh, yeah, they did Dragon's Crown. Which was,
I did play Unicorn Overlord as well.
That game is amazing.
There's been a lot of fantasy-based XCOM-type strategy RPGs coming out. You also have that King Arthur game, which is an XCOM-type game set in the Arthurian legend.
Not quite XCOM. This one is
Heroes of Might and Magic.
Yeah. Well, it's Ogre Battle. It's straight up Ogre Battle, like left and right, up and down, top to bottom. It's a style of RPG from way, way, way back in the day. It's real-time strategy, but you like assemble units of characters. And when they run into each other on the battlefield, they kind of do an auto attack arrangement where like they carry out actions based on how you arranged them, what they're equipped with. And it's a very specific style of RPG that I haven't seen them.
It's idle? It's an idle game?
Yeah. You don't do the actions. You just watch them fight each other.
You direct the units to where you want them to go on the map,
right.
and they move out like a real time strategy.
You know, at some point we're gonna have to do a gaming history of Majesty. You remember Majesty?
Not at all. I haven't played that one.
Okay, so Majesty is a game in which you built buildings and you attracted heroes, and you had to indirectly get them to fight monsters by just making the surfaces around. It was sort of like real time. Scott, do you remember that game, Majesty?
I vaguely do, I think. Hold on.
Majesty 2 fixed a lot of the problems of the original game.
I don't know if I had this or not. I have to see.
And now it's on Steam with the HD version of it now. came back way back in 2001.
Unicorn Overlord's amazing, though. It's probably my favorite game of the year so far. I loved Ogre Battle back in the day, and this is a better version of Ogre Battle. The characters are awesome and fun to collect. The classes are fun to collect and mix into your units. The world and the story is really cool. It's just fantastic. I love that game.
By the way, Majesty is one of the first games by Paradox. That was published by Paradox.
Way back in the day, Paradox Interactive.
Yeah, 2001 Paradox.
Oh. Wowie. That is old.
Yeah.
That game is old enough to drink.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Actually, I think it actually came out in 2000, and the HD version came out in 2001. I'm trying to remember now. Anyways, it's $10 on Steam if you ever want to give it a gander.
It's actually less than that. It's like $3.
No, it's $10, the HD version anyway.
That's what I was looking at. It was like $3.
Yeah, it came out in 2000, right? Came out in 2000.
But yeah.
No, it came out in 2000. Came out in 2000, and then back in March 2000. And then it had a remaster, I think, in 2001. It was a very fast remaster. It had a lot of interesting things. Then Majesty 2 came out, and I'm trying to remember if it... But here's the thing about Majesty. It was in the same universe as Warlock. And I remember the Warlock series very well. You remember Warlock? Warlock 1, 2, 3, and 4?
No.
It was an RTS game with hundreds of units. It was like, how can you have this many units in an RTS?
Isn't Warlock one of the Dark World IPs?
No. You're thinking of a different Warlock.
Okay.
So anyway, it's it was by Cyberlore Studios. I don't know if they're still around.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah, they shuttered in 2005. But you'll be interested to know. So you know what Cyberlore did? It did the MechWarrior 4 games. And they did the Warcraft 2 expansion, Beyond the Dark Portal.
Wow.
And Heroes of Might and Magic 2 expansion, The Price of Loyalty. And by the way, The Price of Loyalty was a great expansion. I loved that expansion. And it added new artifacts and scenario maps and stuff like that. And it buffed the Necromancer faction, because in Heroes of Might and Magic 2, the Necromancer faction kind of sucked. So. Hmm. Yeah. Oh, the Might and Magic games. It peaked in Might... I don't know. Might and Magic 2 was the first time I played Might and Magic. Heroes of Might and Magic, I mean. Heroes of Might and Magic 3 was a little bit better, but I think it peaked with 2. At some point, they have to remake that game. I know a lot of people still play it, too. Here, Might and Magic 2, they actually play.
Yeah, I remember playing Heroes of Might and Magic back in the day. It's been a long time, though, and I can't even remember which one of them I played.
The last one, I think, was 7. I think
you know what? I think I played the 1995 version, but I also played a version that was like very, very like it looked like an Atari game.
Yeah. That would be in 1995. 1996 was Heroes of Might and Magic 2. I remember that because it was the first time I had a good paying job, and I just went nuts. Buying stuff. Look this up.
Yeah.
The last one
I remember the factions in these games were always so fun. Just the sheer amount of units in the game and how each side had different things. I always thought it was weird that like the knights had just like this paladin guy, whereas everybody else has like dragons and griffins and phoenixes. They just have a guy in larger armor.
Hey, I'm old enough that I actually played the first Might and Magic, the RPG. It was a third-person game. So yeah, the last one was Heroes of Might and Magic 7. I never bought it though. The last one I had was number 6, and I didn't play much of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, it got mixed reviews. It's loyal but buggy. They need to do a remake, an actual remake of the Heroes of Might and Magic series. Actually, they need to make a remake of the Might and Magic series, because the first game was in 3D, right? It was a turn-based 3D, but still, and you were wandering through this enormous world.
Yeah.
And you, of course, you had to have the your grid paper and map it out as you went along.
I liked Might and Magic better than, or I liked Heroes of Might and Magic. I never got a chance to play the one that was. I never got a chance to play just regular, I guess, Might and Magic without the heroes.
I made campaigns that were famous. They what's it called? People would always ask me if they could include my thing in their compilations. I sure. That's actually how I met Dan Quick. Actually, if I remember correctly, I met Dan Quick with making my Heroes of Might and Magic 2 and 3 scenarios.
Ah.
And he was running the Might and Magic thing, and then he was running the Civilization thing, and boom, that's how it happened. Anyways, we already talked about what you've been playing. Let's go into quick news. Tim Sweeney emailed Gabe Newell calling Valve you assholes over Steam policies a while ago, to which Valve COO replied internally, "You mad, bro?" The reason I'm bringing this up because Valve just brushed off Tim Sweeney while Apple is getting all pissy about it.
Yeah. Tim Sweeney, that guy is not making friends with pretty much anyone in the tech industry, except for Sony, which I don't know. I guess that's kind of all you need if I don't know. It's just weird how combative he is with so many folks.
Some people are just like that. But it's like Apple is just as combative, so.
Right. And except Apple has an army of lawyers that wouldn't back down.
And Epic has an army of lawyers, so you have an army of lawyers against an army of lawyers. Man, but Fortnite's ever make Epic so powerful. It's like never has one game made. Well, okay, Half-Life with Valve, I guess. But yeah. Still. I mean, even Valve, you know, they required a lot of games, you know.
I think Witcher got CD Projekt Red going and good old games, and so each of these companies seem to have at least one game.
Yeah, but you see, it's not so much that you can make your own store. Even CD Projekt Red never had their own store. They just, you know, went to good old games and said, hey, why don't you release this for us without any DRM? So it's just funny.
I thought CD Projekt owned Good Old Games.
That's what, right? I thought, too.
Okay. Yeah, but Good Old Games is not Valve. Nor is it Epic Games.
It isn't, but it's
about... I'm glad that it isn't.
I would say that Good Old Games is one of the only things that comes even close to what Valve does on the level that Valve does it.
Next news item. Dark Souls 2 modders have finally managed to crank its frame rate past 60 without borking the entire game. So how is this an achievement for you, TJ?
You know, like, the reason people ask for, like, remakes and remasters of Bloodborne and Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 3 so much is because every one of those games' frame rates on PS4 hardware is capped at 30 frames per second. And we finally had a taste of From Software at 60 frames per second with Elden Ring and the Armor Demon's Core. Souls.
And Armor Core.
And Armor Core, yes. And so, like, people want that back on the other stuff. They want that in the original. They want that on the original Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 3 and Bloodborne, like, probably the most. It feels like every season we have at least one fresh wave of, please, Sony, give us Bloodborne remastered. Please. Please, From Software, give us Bloodborne remastered. It's like clockwork. It comes along, it changes with the seasons. But, so to actually, like, take that, these are some intrepid folks that went, well, if From Software won't do it, I will. And, good for them, because Dark Souls 2 is kind of a black sheep of the series. A lot of people don't like it for a lot of reasons. I think it's just kind of less interesting compared to Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 3. But there's a lot of people that still love it, and I still think it has some pretty cool bosses in it. So good for them for being able to do that.
Yeah, no one's calling for a remake of Kingsfield. Just sickening.
I don't think a lot of people even remember Kingsfield anymore.
There are a lot of Kingsfield games. I mean, they even went up through 2006, but the problem is that, you know, the last major entry was in 2001 with Kingsfield 4. But people have to remember, this is the game that From Software was making that was basically the Dark Souls game before Demon's Souls.
Yes. And it was first person, if I remember correctly. And to a certain extent, like, I wouldn't mind seeing a remake of Kingsfield, but I feel like that's the kind of thing that From Software isn't going to do itself. It feels like something it would job out to, like, a third-party developer, like, enthusiast developer. Like, that feels like the kind of job you might give to maybe Night Dive.
Yeah. It is a 3D game from a PS1, so you have that jankiness. It's one of the first 3D console role playing games too.
Mm-hmm.
And Final Fantasy VI came along and ate its lunch. Seven.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, that's a shit show still going on right now, isn't it?
What, the Final Fantasy VII stuff?
Yeah. There's still a shit show going on with that.
Oh, people are...
I thought it was doing fine.
No, it's like... people are worried about the direction it's going in. And the changes they're making to the original... well, not the original, but the first chapter of the remake. It's like people are getting nervous about it.
Oh, I've heard some things about the ending that people are, like... panicked about, but at the same time, like, they seem to have made it clear from the outset that this is not going to follow the same beats as the original game. So I don't know. I haven't gotten far enough to be like, this sucks or this doesn't suck, but I guess I'll find out what everybody's talking about when I get there, because I am playing through that game as well right now.
Photorealistic and RTS Empire of the Ants announced by Microids, and by the way, this is the second time they've done Empire of the Ants. Photorealistic, you know, I've seen better. It's not like they're really pushing the hardware. I mean, yes, it's using Unreal Engine 5, but I don't know. I expected a little bit more photorealism. I've seen similar stuff in Pikmin, the last Pikmin game. Granted, the Pikmin themselves aren't realistic, but...
yeah. I mean, even in... I saw this earlier today, and I got a look at it, and I thought, like, it doesn't. You're right. It looks a little strange. But at the same time, I remember playing SimAnt, and the idea of someone else trying to do something like that is kind of amusing.
There's a difference between SimAnt and Empire of the Ants. So SimAnt was a simulation, and it wasn't an RTS. It was more of a, you know, well... it wasn't an RTS, but you still had to conquer the house. But Empire of the Ants is a full-blown RTS. And based on a book, too. A French book, which is weird. Both of them are based on... both these games are, say, based on the same book. So Microids is going back to this. I mean, here's the thing. We've seen early shots, and they're good. It'll be interesting to see what it's like. It's really polished. And like I said, it's with the Unreal Engine 5, so hopefully it'll look really good, like you're watching a TV show.
Interesting. Yeah, like this, even if it's not necessarily one-to-one SimAnt, it's just odd to see like this kind of thing. I didn't know that there was a book about it. That's that's interesting in and of itself. But I want to see gameplay. I want to like fiddle with this and see like what it's about. What are we supposed to do in this game?
I'm curious about Small End now. I'm curious about Small End.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because it's not quite grounded. I mean, it is a survival game, but it's more of a... it's more Tolkienian. You know, it's more like J.R.R. Tolkien. Yeah, people are saying Ferngully, but it does feel like something that Tolkien would write if he was writing about tiny people who live in the blades of grass and ride bugs and fly on bugs.
Interesting.
What's interesting is that Small Ants started development before Grounded. Like I said, Small Ant is the reason I said, oh, so that's why Microsoft's making it multi-platform. They because it's like Small Ant's coming out, and they want to have their game out before Small Ant comes out. Take advantage of that.
Yeah.
So, Resident Evil 4 Remake crosses 7 million copies sold, and the Resident Evil series now has exceeded 154 million copies sold. I still have not gotten around to the remake. There are changes to that one as well, isn't there? To the original story.
Yeah, but every one of them was for the better. There was, like, very little that people didn't love about the new setup. The characters came off better. Like, Ashley was cooler. Louise was cooler. Krauser was cooler, which he was, like, one of the worst parts of the original game. And then, like, the there was stuff that they kind of, the only thing that I think that you could argue was, like, maybe a little bit questionable is that they kept some content out of the base game that was in the original game and put it in Ada's DLC. So that's, like, the only thing I would be like, eh.
I'm trying to remember. Was Ada Wong in 4?
She is.
I'm trying to remember where she is.
She's, like, traveling parallel to Leon throughout the entire game. She lends him a hand a few different times, but, like, never sticks around for long. And then eventually after you beat the game, you can, in the original, you can play a new campaign that has her. It's DLC in the remake, but it's still there, and it's pretty fun.
The only real character I remember is the vendor.
Welcome, stranger. Yeah. That vendor is amazing. He's also one of the few people that's, like, voiced by a reputable voice actor, like a voice actor with a long history and lots of work in Resident Evil 4. I found that interesting.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Saber Interactive confirms, quote-unquote, a number of titles still in development following today's Embracer sale. And this comes to us from Eurogamer. Saber Interactive Chief Operating Officer Tim Willits has taken to social media to confirm a number of titles will remain in development at the publisher, including Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine 2, following today's Embracer Group sale. This morning, following rumors of a sale last month, embattled publisher Embracer announced that it had reached an agreement to sell a large portion of Saber Interactive for $247 million. Just so you know, Embracer is basically a Russian company. So there's multiple reasons why they're selling. The buyer is Beacon Interactive, a company established by Saber Interactive co-founder Matthew Karch. As part of that news, Embracer confirmed that it retained two joint projects with Saber, with one of those being the troubled Star Wars The Old Republic remake, according to Bloomberg's Jason Schreier. It was unclear, however, if today's sale would impact any of the other previously announced titles in development at Saber. Of the three titles confirmed to still be in development by Willits, Warhammer 40,000 Space Marine 2 is expected to arrive in the latter half of 2024 following a substantial delay. An 80s-inspired cooperative first-person shooter, John Carpenter's Toxic Commando, is due to launch sometime this year. As for Jurassic Park Survival, which was announced during December's Game Awards, a release window is yet to be shared. Embracer sold off all of Saber Interactive's branded studios, plus New World Interactive, Nimble Giant Entertainment, 3D Realms, Slipgate Ironworks. Aren't Slipgate Ironworks the guys behind, the Halo meets Portal game, Slipgate? Or am I thinking of
No. No, that's a different group. Slipgate Ironworks did Graven, which is like old school retro shooter where you play as like a mage. They also did, they also had a hand in, helping with the development of the first Ghost Runner.
Right, Splitgate is the name of the Halo meets Portal thing. Madhead Games, Fractured Byte, and Sandbox Strategies. It'll cease all operations in Russia, something that will help it, quote-unquote, reduce its geopolitical risk, or, in other words, not get blown up by a drone. Because that's in the news past 24 hours, is the Ukraine sending drones and blowing up all the Russian oil refineries. I played the first Space Marine. It was pretty okay. It forced you to be aggressive. You know, this is not a game in which you're going to hide behind something. No, in order to gain back your health, you had to be really aggressive.
Mm-hmm. It's good to see that these groups are getting out from under Embracer. It's looking increasingly sketchy with Embracer, and it doesn't look like it's about to become less sketchy anytime soon. The way that things have been going there, like, we've seen a lot of we've seen tons of layoffs, we've seen studio closures. Like, the folks who developed Saints Row are not around, or the studio that developed Saints Row is no more. Like, it's gone, and that sucks. I hate that.
Volition?
Yeah, Volition. And I don't care if they made a bad last Saints Row game. I didn't really play it, so I can't really say one way or the other. I do know that I don't feel like they deserve to be gone.
Here's the thing with Volition. Yeah, but here's the thing. To me, Volition was on the way out with Agents of Mayhem. So people did not connect with that game.
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely the last Saints Row that did him in, like, the finality of it. But I don't know. I'm just happy to, like, Saber Interactive has been doing great things, and so have a few of these other groups that are mentioned here. I would hate for any of them to go away because of what kind of trouble Embracer's been going through since they lost a massive deal that set them on this course of layoffs and studio closures.
Yeah. But Saber Interactive has been around for a while. They've been around since 2001.
Yeah, and like what a swoop in for the co-founder of the company to just like have another company on hand and come in and take it. Like,
I was about to say the only bad thing you could say is that they really botched some of the stuff, like Halo: The Master Chief Collection. It's like, they could have done a better job with that one.
Yeah, agreed. It's Saber Interactive is a group that has had like some hits and some misses, and then some stuff that's like you wish it had some promise. You wish it was better, but it just quite wasn't there. Evil Dead the game, I will maintain, is a very fun asymmetrical multiplayer game. It was janky though. And janky to a degree that was like, you don't want to contend with the jank just as much as you're contending with the actual trappings of the game. That's not fun. But it had so many fun things going on with like the characters and the weapons and being able to play as the Deadites. And I love that game. And there's a lot of Saber Interactive games that are kind of the same way, where it's like there's jank and it's not perfect. But there's something fun in there.
I mean, like Quake Champions.
Yes, like
Quake Champions. The thing about them is that they for a long while, they were just doing ports. You know, they were doing ports to the Switch, they were doing ports to PC. Like, they were responsible for porting games like Crysis 1, 2, and 3 to the Switch, among other consoles.
Yeah, I didn't used to think very highly of them, but the last games that they've been doing, like some of the stuff they've been coming out with over the last few years, is not terrible.
Do you ever play Gloomhaven? Because they also made the port from the board game.
I never got to play Gloomhaven.
Right. So you know what Gloomhaven is, right?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, The Asmodee Digital hired them and said, hey, make a board game version of our extremely popular game. See, the one thing I don't like about Gloomhaven is that it's a legacy game, and I am fundamentally opposed to legacy games. Legacy board games, I mean. I don't like to play a board game once and ruin all the pieces. I want to be able to play it again, you know? At least when you port a legacy game to PC, they can't do that shit.
Yeah. And, like, a lot of the stuff that they've done, like, over the last... I liked the heck out of... the Mudrunner games are pretty much popular all over Europe. Everybody loves playing those games for some reason. I think they're a bit of a slog, and I feel like I'm right for that. They also helped the Phoenix Point games from the creator of the original XCOM, which I know people were divided on because of the part system where you would like target different parts of the bodies on enemies.
Fuck that and, noise. Fuck it.
You weren't a fan?
No. But here's the thing, and I did not know this. They're rumored to be making a new Painkiller title.
I do remember Painkiller. I also remember, I think they would be on the third one at this point, right? Because there was one and two, right?
No, they're making a new one though. It's not a remake. It's like you Doom, for all it got away from being just shoot and kill, shoot and kill, shoot and kill. Painkiller is all shoot and kill, shoot and kill, shoot and kill.
Mm-hmm.
And we need a plotless shooter at some point. Although, okay, so most people might know Painkiller from the dub that Yahtzee Croshaw did a long time ago.
What
was it? Outside, 12 o'clock, Pufferfish. Yeah, they did the console ports of Phoenix Point.
Yep. Yeah, so good for them. I'm glad that they got out from under Embracer because they probably still have a lot of good stuff to do.
Well, I mean, Star Wars: The Old Republic is having its problems. I'll say.
Yeah, that's the next one we got here. Actually, we've got another Star Wars story here.
Oh yeah, so go ahead there, TJ.
Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection players tear into Esper from PC Gamer. Right after last month's well-regarded remasters of the first three Tomb Raider games, developer Esper has put out the Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection, an up-resed package of the original beloved Battlefront game.
Just so you know, it's Aspire.
Oh, sorry.
It's a punny name, you know, Aspire.
Okay.
Although people are probably calling him Asper now anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I did. But with over 1,000 Steam reviews already in, the Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection has spiraled down to mostly negative overall rating, as fans complain of bugs, crashes, server issues, and a borderline unplayable multiplayer mode. The state of the game servers at launch are a frequent point of complaint. The original Battlefront games were adored for their multiplayer, but numerous players around the internet report that Classic Collection launched with a sum total of 3 dedicated servers, 64 players each, to serve almost 10,000 concurrent players. That is abysmal. Wow. So basically, you're either... Okay, players can host their own servers, which should help, but some users report that feature isn't working properly either. But what baffles most are the space requirements. The Classic Collection on Steam, which is
You skipped a paragraph.
Eh?
Multiple gaming Reddits.
Okay. Multiple gaming subreddits are currently awash in complaints about the collection, particularly the Battlefront subreddit itself. Complaints range from floaty controls to crashes to stuttering to incredibly bare-bones options for playing with friends. The writer shares their experience of attempting to get into a game, but it left them on Battlefront 2 hanging at character select for a full minute before they gave up and rejoined the server. And the spice requirement for this on Steam, it wants an incredible 62.87 gigabytes of storage, where the original game only needed 12.39 gigabytes combined. That's insane. That's like I've seen what that game looks like in action. It didn't have enough of a globe to pack on 50 more gigabytes of space.
Yeah, there's more servers now than when the article was first reported, but it's still pretty low. Still, it's for 10,000 players, it's pretty low.
How do you launch with 3 servers?
I don't know. I mean, I remember being one of the launch players of World of Warcraft.
But, like, why would they think that people wouldn't find out?
I think people assume that they would host their own servers. See, that's the thing.
Hmm.
See, this shows the big difference between making a single-player game like Tomb Raider and making a multiplayer game like Battlefront. They're two different beasts. And one is a hungrier beast than the other.
Yeah. I just don't understand, because like the multiplayer was always the funnest part of the Battlefront games. Why would they think that people wouldn't find out about this when they launched the game? And if the expectation was that they should launch their own servers, then why didn't they make that clear from the outset? It just feels like that was poor planning on their part.
Maybe they thought people were going to be so interested in the single-player option of the Ghost games that they would ignore the multiplayer or something. I don't know.
Wild.
And you know, the funny thing is that the Battlefront games are available on the Xbox Store in their original thing, and Microsoft turned on all the servers for those games. You know that? They turned on all the servers for Call of Duty and Battlefront and everything else. So it's sort of like, hey, you know, it's more expensive to buy these games individually. I think like Star Wars Battlefront 1 cost $10 or something like that. It's like, but it has all the server options that you'd want, you know, provided by Xbox Live. People are really enjoying the Tomb Raider games. I can't bring myself to play those games again because the basic gameplay doesn't appeal to me anymore. But have you played any of the remasters?
I have not. I remember back in the day the movement in those games.
The tank controls.
I hated that. I really did. And jumping was like you would press the button and hold it down, and about 2 seconds later, Laura would jump.
And then fall.
I hated that. And, like, you had to commit to the jump. If you were doing a forward momentum jump, you better make sure that you're going to land on something, because there's no going back or changing direction.
Yeah, but, you know, go ahead.
You have a slow plodding jump that leads to a quick plodding death if you miss the cliff or whatever you're supposed to land on.
I just remember this is the first game in which I really cared about the main character. When Laura died, I felt bad.
Yeah.
And like when she fell, and here's the thing, when she fell in water and drowned, it was sickening the way she would just grab her throat and start twitching all over the place before she went limp. That was disturbing.
It was also being on the side of the cliff and making her do the handstand, and if you hold it for too long, then she just falls on her head and breaks her neck.
Ooh. I know that when she falls into a cliff, she hits the ground and is like this crumpled mess.
Yep.
Of course, it was always thrilling, you know, running away from that T-Rex, you know.
Yep. You discover dinosaurs, possibly the most amazing archaeological discovery of all time, only to shoot them to death with pistols because whatever.
Oh, you're just shooting wildlife, too. Oh, that's an endangered Siberian tiger. Well, it's got to die. Oh, someone's dog is here. Shoot it.
Showing me its teeth.
Yeah. I still prefer that Lara Croft to the new Lara Croft, who is just a whiny moaner. She just grunts all the time. That's all. She doesn't have any dialogue. She grunts. At least Lara's having a good time in the original games. Especially locking her butler in the closet.
She's all seasoned and a veteran and rich and doesn't care about it.
You don't have to be seasoned to be bubbly. I mean, look at Bayonetta.
I guess that's true.
But, yeah. It's, you know, I'm pretty sure that these things will get fixed at some point for Battlefront. I think Aspyre doesn't seem like a company that's just going to say, yeah, we released it, that's it, we don't care anymore. We'll see. And since it's on Steam, there's probably going to be a lot of modders.
Yeah. I hope that they get it, because like a lot of people really wanted to play that, obviously, and I hope they get what they want, because it sucks to revisit something that you cared so much about only for it to be crummy.
Speaking of modders, Halo 2 Online matchmaking returns in March thanks to community modders, and this comes from Shack News. For those who spent a good chunk of their life playing Halo 2, the shutdown of the online servers in 2010, was it really that long ago? I remember watching the countdown as the last two players, or there's a bunch of players who were keeping it alive just by constantly playing Halo 2, and Microsoft would not shut it down until there was only one player left. It's like, yeah, one player is not multiplayer. Bye. It spelled an end of an era, but the talented team at Insignia has been igniting the fires once more. Thanks to some reverse engineering, Halo 2's online matchmaking is coming back via the Insignia platform. today, March 13, 2014, the Insignia team took to X, formerly Twitter, to announce Halo 2 online matchmaking functionality will launch on Insignia in public beta form on the 15th at 1 p.m. ET. Back in 2022, Insignia was formed in a bid to provide a replacement for Xbox Live functionality for the original Xbox console. And when we say the original Xbox console, we mean that big black thing, you know? Though the team is not affiliated with Microsoft, it's been able to incrementally provide online support for these old games, with 169 now supported as of this writing. And now, in 2024, almost 20 years after the Halo 2 was first released, Insignia is ready to let the general public start testing out Halo 2 online functionality. Those who have been interested in this will need access to your original Xbox. The team at Insignia have a comprehensive connection guide to step you through the process. As for what will be available, the team is prepared with several of the original playlists that Bungie designed. Fans will remember the likes of Rumble Pit, Double Teams, Team Skirmish, Team SWAT, and of course Big Team Battle, along with a few more. Rather amazingly, the team is also working on bringing back Halo 2's ranked system. This system is often touted as the best online ranking mechanic ever released. It saw players battling one another to rise through 50 ranks, with the last 7 being represented by celestial bodies. And oh yeah, by the way, you never really had the imbalance. Like, you didn't have noobs playing against really experienced players. That's how good the online ranking was. You know, you never were plopped in a situation in which you're going to get sniped by someone 2 minutes in. For those who still have an original Xbox and are yearning for old school Halo 2 action, this weekend is no doubt going to be a good one. And I want to point out the reaction by Microsoft is, yeah, sure, why not? Go ahead. If you still have your original Xbox, we don't care. Just go ahead and do whatever. Nintendo, yeah, here come the lawsuits. Here come the cease and desists. Fuck you. You can't play Smash. What's it called? Even though there's the first one, and we don't use it anymore.
Mm-hmm. Nope. Yeah, it's a shame, but this is awesome. The Halo 2 online matchmaking. Like, putting that back together. Also, it's kind of like, okay, am I wrong to think that that's a little bit of a bad sign for the series, that players would rather go back and revive Halo 2 than play
Halo 1? No, I mean, it's not going to be that as many people as you want. For one thing, you need an original Xbox, okay? That's the number one thing. Although, here's the thing. I wonder if people are old enough to remember GameSpy Tunnel. Does anybody remember GameSpy Tunnel? For those who don't know, GameSpy Tunnel, that was the only way you could play Halo 1 multiplayer, was to connect your Xbox to your PC and then log in through GameSpy. And, you know, and that's how Blood Ghost became such a legend. You didn't have to carry your Xbox, budget guys carrying their Xbox to their friend's place for a LAN party, although those did happen.
Yeah.
But if you wanted to play online, you could do it with GameSpy Tunnel. And that thing kept GameSpy alive for a while.
Yes, I remember the good old days of GameSpy. I kind of miss them, but it's really interesting the kind of workarounds that modders will do for this kind of stuff. And it's really cool to see that they got it working again and figured out even how to make it work with servers and online functionality. And to the point of what you were talking about, the Nintendo Switch emulator that got shut down.
The Smash Brothers, remember they wanted to do online.
There was a yeah, and okay. I think you're talking about Dolphin. Dolphin was like Smash. It was like a modded remaster of Smash Bros. Melee, but like, upscaled and then with online play, but Nintendo hates that shit because it's not something Nintendo made.
Yeah. Okay, I'm gonna take you way back because I remember seeing this logo on like a few weeks ago. Do you remember the Total Entertainment Network 10?
Yes.
That's the only way you could play Duke Nukem 3D or yeah. Panzer General or Quake.
Yeah.
It was defunct in 1999, but I could have sworn it lasted a little bit longer than that. It was just... Oh, and also Diablo. The first Diablo, number one Diablo.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I remember 10. It's seeing the logo is sort of like a wash of nostalgia washing over you. You know, like, here's something I used briefly. You have to use because you had DOS.
Yeah.
And then it became Pogo.
Oh, go ahead.
It said then it became Pogo.
Oh, yeah.
Here, you want to do something interesting? Go to 10.net. Their website is still up.
Huh.
Their website is still up.
That's wild.
I love these defunct websites that no one bothered taking down. Some of them are just zombies that are going around, and you can just see the past. You know what? This is what 1999 looked like, folks.
Yep, the things we had to do to make online work.
Yeah.
Back in the infancy, when there was no like Wi-Fi, there was no there wasn't broadband, and everything was slow and methodical, and you had to go into a lot of DOS windows and see and check on some ports and prompts and figure out what worked and what didn't.
Okay, here's the thing. Listen to this about Duke Nukem 3D. Once you've got a version installed on your hard drive, run the Duke Nukem Setup.exe program and make some adjustments. Choose the Sound Setup option, then select Choose Sound FX Card from the next list. Find your sound card and hit Return. On the next screen, choose Use These Settings and Continue. On the next four screens, select 4 voices, 8-bit mixing, stereo sound, and 11 kilohertz, respectively. Once you do all that, you need to turn off the music, blah, 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 blah. Do you remember having a sound card?
Yes. Yes, I do. I remember testing all the I had no idea what my sound card was, and I had no idea how to check. So it took a lot of me going through the menu and testing each option until I found the one that worked.
Remember Voodoo FX?
Yes.
Voodoo FX, Sound Blaster, Pentium 2, let's go. Oh, God, that brings me back.
Yep.
I still have Duke Nukem 3D somewhere. I'm going to have to play it at some point. Those bastards are going to pay for destroying my ride. You see Channel 10 News. The last entry was in 1997, June 10th. Blood Festival for Friday the 13th. Blood. Oh, it's from Blood. Remember Blood? That was Monolith, actually. That was one of Monolith's first games. It was Blood. And I don't know who did Blood 2. I know it was a disaster, but I'm not sure it was. Was it Monolith who did Blood 2? I don't think so. I think it was someone else.
Yeah, I don't remember.
Let's check right now. Yeah, it wasn't it was Monolith. But if I remember correctly, GT Interactive fucked with them. So. You gotta play Blood at some point. They did a remake. Blood. Oh, it's on Steam. It's called Blood something something. It's a cutesy name they have for it. Now I have to search. Find Blood. God, there's so many games that have blood in it that I'm not going to find it. I'm just going to look for Blood Remake. Oh, Blood Fresh Supply. That's it. And that came out in 2019. And basically they just made it so you can run it on things. There's nothing different about the graphics at all. I will say this, though. Blood was at a time in which you could – what's it called? They didn't calculate how the bullets were going. So when they fired at you, they would just hit you. So you just had to make sure that you ran away from them. And guess who developed the update, the remake?
Who's that?
Make your first guess. It's probably right.
The Blood remake?
Yeah.
I would imagine that it's New Blood Interactive.
No, Night Dive.
Oh, I was close.
They did all of them. But if you ever played... Have you ever played Blood?
I have not.
Okay, it's $5 on Steam now. You have no reason not to go see it and see some gaming history. The other game that I hope they bring back, and a lot of people actually, when Phil Spencer wore the Texan t-shirt, it's like people got really excited. they really want him to they really want a remake of that game. You ever played Hexen?
Yes.
Yes, I've played Hexen.
The only thing I remember is Hexen 2, you launched a sheep from a catapult. That's what I remember best.
That's crazy.
Yes. Hexen was one of the better ones, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, here's a game from way back when. Do you remember Redneck Rampage? That had all no. That was in the magazines constantly. They really wanted you to buy that, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It's a Redneck Rampage. Look it up. Look it up, kiddies. This is what games in the late 90s, the shooters with the late 90s were like when everybody was using the build engine before everybody went to that 3D. You know, everybody was using the build engine, which was 2.5D, which is what Duke Nukem was. And by the way, the build engine was when I first started making levels for anything. I did it on the build engine, and I made multiplayer levels for Duke Nukem 3D. And then I did levels for Unreal Tournament with Unreal Editor, and that was it for me. I mean, other editors, but I mean for shooters. I miss Unreal Tournament, the first one. You know, I don't like the sequels. I just like the first one, or at least the Game of the Year edition.
Hmm.
There are so many mods, that one mod in which there was monsters all over the place, and everybody was playing against each other, but there was like monsters from the Unreal that you had to fight through that would attack everybody. So. And also, the bots were the best. And you can see the path notes. Here's the thing. What I would do is when I made a level, I would set it to no players, which means I'd have 10 AI bots fighting each other. And what's funny is whenever there was a blind corner, the bot would slow down and hunch over and get really slow and prepare for something around the corner. It was fun to watch. Anyways, Halo 2?
Yep. And like, yeah, I don't think there's much more to say about it. They managed to make a, what? Let's see, 20-year-old game work. Its multiplayer is working again. Without Halo Master Chief Collection, which I would say is questionable at best. Well, I guess it's actually fixed up now, but when I played it back when it was
it's released, better.
It was pretty crummy.
It's better, but people have a lot of nostalgia for Halo 2 multiplayer.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is that I applaud Microsoft for not cracking down on this, like saying, you can't do this. It's all right. No, they said, yeah, whatever. It's only going to grow the product, you know. If you want to play the old school Halo 2 using a defunct box, go right ahead. And I think that's the main reason why they're allowing this, is that you have to do this through the original Xbox. You can't do it through the original. So, hey, if you still have an original Xbox and you're managing to get multiplayer through it, hey, more power to you.
You think if you could play this on like an Xbox Series X, they'd probably be like, nope.
And I don't think they can anyway.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. You'd have to go. Well, here's the thing. Microsoft's policy is that if you're going to do that, you have to go into development mode, which means you can't play any new games. You can only play old games or modded games or homebrew games on it now. You can't do both, right? It's either you play the new games, you go online, or you play modded games or homebrew stuff. Then, you know, in the developer side, that's fine. But you can't do both, you know? Which is why a lot of people bought the Xbox Series S to be their homebrew machine, in which they played, you know, Super Nintendo games and old GameCube games and stuff like that. You know, all these games, you know, that were from the PlayStation 1, 2, 3, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Said, yeah, Microsoft said, yeah, sure, but you can't play regular games on it while you have that mode on. And I think it's a good policy.
I think it makes sense, at least.
Yeah. But like I said, Nintendo's like, nope. Let's go sue. Here come our lawyers. Cease and desist.
Yep. Nintendo might use that someday, and that by itself is enough of a reason to crack down on you here with the full force of the law.
But Smash Brothers is a 25-year-old game. I don't care. You're getting sued, buddy.
Yep. Cease and desist.
You can't even have a Pokemon party. Remember that? Because they had Pikachu on their poster.
Yeah.
But it's bizarre. It's cutting off your nose to spite your face. I mean, Nintendo are like Apple people. They will get shat upon and still be fans of the console, you know? If ever Nintendo weaponized their fans' love of the system and let them do whatever the fuck they wanted, can you imagine how much they would pay for shitty stuff? It's like they would just, you know, it's like you have loyalty and yet you shit on that loyalty. And the thing is that, you know, there is no other console manufacturer doing the type of games that Nintendo's doing. You know, family friendly or at least soft edge. Yeah, you know, not trying to have the highest resolution or the most power, just, you know, going into specific gameplay stuff. And I always wondered if someone else would ever do that. But Microsoft and Sony are busy trying to be PCs, you know. Yahtzee Croshaw said that the Xbox and the PlayStation are games that I have in my office, but the Nintendo consoles are the ones I have in my living room.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. By the way, Scott, are you which system are you playing? You're playing Eden Chronicles on Steam, right? I'm willing to bet. I don't think it's previewing on the Switch yet. But I am looking forward to Eden Chronicles 100 Heroes. I'm just going to wait until it comes out before I get it.
It looks good. Yep. And it's even kind of a sad story, but like the creator of Suikoden passed away, who was also working on Eidon Chronicles, so that kind of makes this his last thing.
Which, by the way, I just, you know what I saw on Games Coming Up? They're actually doing Shin Megami Tensei 5 remake on all consoles.
Yeah.
It's like, I guess if Persona's getting this popular, we might as well introduce people to the Shin Megami Tensei games now.
Yeah. But it's going to be, Eidon Chronicles is going to be awesome, and it's going to take on even more of a thing, and I hope people really enjoy it, because it's that guy's last work.
Yeah. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave comments at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Try to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us an iTunes comments. You're more likely to find us on Podbean. On Twitter/X, I'm Jonah Falcon.
I'm Johnny Chugs, and Scott is at Charger Moore.
Yeah, and we will see you next week.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.